Okay, so thanks a lot to all the organizers, Paul, Mark, and the others, for inviting me here, for giving me the honor to give the first talk here, the first presentation. And you will see that this is joint work with my colleague and former PhD student, Steffi Müller, who is also in the audience. And most of what I'm talking about belongs to her PhD thesis. As you will see, recent advances in option pricing via binomial trees, that's a very basic topic. And you might say, well, nearly everything has happened there, and maybe I can show you that there are some new things that have theoretical impact and practical impact too. Well, in addition to the director, I also want to mention my three sponsors here. So I've got, as usual, the university. Then we have a center where we are doing mathematics together with engineers and another scientist. And then there is this organization here, the Fraunhofer Institute for Industrial Mathematics. This is a German organization by the state, which is partly funded by the state, but mainly has to earn money via projects with industry. So I'm also related to industry via that institute. In my talk, I will tell you a little bit about basic subjects, the first two topics, recall some basics on binomial option pricing, tell a little bit where there are actually the problems, and then I'll try to show you new things, more theoretical in the one-dimensional case, more practical, I would guess, in the multi-dimensional setting. But let's step back a little bit in history about the start of binomial trees. It's always questions, what was the first, the egg or the hen or whatever, and in binomial trees and in diffusion processes, it's clear the Black-Scholes formula was first, which is strange, right? Because mathematically and conceptually, it's much more complicated than binomial trees. And for the economists at that time, it must have come as a shock because on top of it being conceptually quite complicated, it had economic significance like risk-neutral pricing, risk-neutral portfolios, and things like that. And so they thought some time how all these things could be understood. And the idea of Sharpe, more or less, was, well, replication is there is always something which you don't need, yeah? Always something which is dependent. So he said, put it simply, if you have only two states of the world, but three securities, then it's like in linear systems, systems of linear equations, where you have two equations, three unknowns, and so leave away one of those, it can be replicated by the others, and that more or less is the birth of binomial trees. Now, what is a binomial tree? Every one of you knows that. One-dimensional binomial tree looks like that, a very compact representation of all possible paths. At each node, you can go up by a factor u, down by a factor d, and the probability for up is p, for down is 1 minus p. So you always have the same situation, which leads to the recombination situation. So down and up is the same as up and down. And after n periods, you just have n plus 1 possible values. So that's a binomial tree. Now, binomial tree is a simple thing. And the question, of course, was, does it have also the economic properties that the Black-Scholes model has? And the answer is, yes, it has. That was very nice for the economists. As expected, it has the completeness property, which means that each final payment b, which is a function of those n plus 1 values or of the path of the whole binomial tree, it can indeed be replicated by trading in the underlying stock and bond. So we have this completeness property. And on top of that, we can calculate the price. The initial cost of this replication strategy here equals the option price, and both are given by the discounted expectation of the final payment under the so-called risk-neutral or equivalent martingale measure, which in this setting is just given by a product of the one period risk-neutral measure, and that can be calculated explicitly here. So that's easy, and here you see we have the equivalent martingale measure property, that's all. So with regard to these economic properties, replication, risk-neutral pricing, binomial models have the same properties as the Black-Scholes model. So why should we consider binomial trees? Now, here are three arguments. First, easy to understand. You just saw them. No stochastic integrals, no PDEs, nothing. Risk neutrality and replication, both are in it. And as you will see later, you can easily calculate option prices in those models, so that's perfect. However, the question remains, do these things have to do something with reality? And if we believe that reality is maybe mirrored better by a geometric Brownian motion, by a Heston model or whatever, the question is, are binomial models in any way related to the continuous time stock price models? That's one thing. And the second thing, which is also something that has to be understood clearly, does a binomial model help us to calculate an approximation for such a price of an option in a continuous time setting? And while here we more look at, does it have the same economic properties? Here it's just a numerical approximation. We do not necessarily need to approximate this price by option prices in the binomial model. They are just numerical approximations. We calculate expectations there, and then they might converge or they might not. And to ensure that they converge, we look at the distribution of the underlying processes. We look at the past behavior of the corresponding two models, or more formal, we find convergence criteria for a binomial model converges towards the continuous time model. Okay, so here's a little question for you. Those are discretized versions of a geometric Brownian motion and of a binomial process with n equal 1,000 trials on 1 year. Which is the binomial process? So, binomial or geometric Brownian motion? Who goes for binomial? Okay. Who goes for binomial there? Okay, and as ever, the non-talking majority wins. Now, this is the binomial, and you can see it maybe here. There are little phases that are much more linear than you have them there. But you see it? They are quite similar. And the question, of course, is how to find the correct relations between a sufficiently fine binomial tree and a geometric Brownian motion. And as we're still in the beginning, there is a solution for that. We have Donsker's theorem that ensures convergence of discrete approximations to geometric Brownian motions, or more or less to the Brownian motion itself. And here it's just you need equality of the first two moments of the log prices of the relative increment. This is delta t. This is the smallest or the step size in the binomial process. That has to be the same in the continuous time model as in the binomial model, the same for the second moment. If these two things are satisfied, then we have weak convergence. Weak convergence, for those who are specialized in partial differential equations, weak convergence means we are approximating the distribution. That in the end, we are also approximating the expectation is a consequence of it. But if you solve the Black-Scholes PDE by numerical methods, that's something different. You're trying to approximate the expectation, and this is given by the partial differential equation. Here we're approximating the distribution, and the distribution determines the expectation later on. So for convergence here, we don't need things like stability or consistency or things. They are already built in the probabilistic approach. Now this is quite easy. This can be calculated, that's this. This can be calculated, that's this. Here we only have two values, so that's easy to write down. Now we have two nonlinear equations and three unknowns, and possibly we have 1 degree of freedom, possibly. And why possibly? Because P has to be between 0 and 1. This is not automatically satisfied here. You can solve this here, but it's not clear, this argument. Just 2 and 3 unknowns, 1 degree of freedom, and we will see later that we have no degree of freedom at all in the multidimensional setting. Popular choices, the Randleman and Barter tree, where we say up and down probabilities are the same, and then you can solve for U and D because it's then linear in the logarithm of that. You have the U and D here. If you want to have the no arbitrage condition, that U is bigger than E to the power R times D, then bigger than D, you need this to be satisfied. But if T is 1 year, this is smaller than 1, so N should be bigger than 1. This is no problem at all. The Cox-Rubinstein tree, which is a bit more popular, relies on having a symmetric approach of the evolution of the log prices, which you can see here. The down movement is just 1 over the up movement. Then you can solve for this, and you get an approximate solution for the probability. And what you see here, it's nice and symmetric with regards to the past, but it's not nice with regards to the probability. And here, the necessary condition for p being between 0 and 1 is, again, n should be sufficiently big, and then it's satisfied. In both these cases, Donsker's theorem ensures that the expected discounted final payment in the binomial model, which is not necessarily the option price, it's the expected discounted final payment under this measure determined by p. This is an approximation for the real one, the continuous time, the expectation of the continuous time process, plus some technical conditions which are something like piecewise continuity plus polynomial boundedness of the final payment here. So, next question, how to compute the option prices there in the binomial tree is easy. At the end, you know what you get, and then just work backwards through the tree. Here in the Randleman-Barter one, it's just the arithmetic mean here, discount, do it like that. In the Cox-Ross-Rubinstein tree, it's exactly the same, with the difference that here you have the p and the 1 minus p. If you never programmed that, do it immediately. It's that easy and that enlightening. You can do this in half an hour or so, and then you have a numerical tool. So for American option pricing, and this is the main reason why we still look at binomial trees, the only thing we have to include here is we have to compare the continuation value that we get backwards with the intrinsic value of the option that we would get from directly exercising the option. And of course, we always do this, which is bigger, so we have to put a max in front of that. And then we have the same simple algorithm for the calculating an approximation to the American option price here. So again, it's very, very simple. Just do it and you will see that it works. Okay, where are the problems? So far, everything has to be simple, understandable. Now, problems come when you look at the multi-asset situation, when you have more than one asset. If you have m assets, you have to match all the expectations, the variances, and the covariances. And you see that the number of covariances, this increases quadratically. So you might run out of free parameters to match all the equations. And even in dimension 3, I will show you that you've got no degree of freedom and maybe no solution at all. So that's one question. The second question is the sometimes very irregular convergence pattern. And you see here, you have no monotonicity. If you increase the time steps, the number of time steps, there is a kind of convergence, but quite irregular and slow. Maybe different for Cox-Ross-Rubinstein and for Randleman and Barter. But it's not that you can say, I just take 500 and then it's good. And 500 needs not to be better than 200. So this is something, the so-called sawtooth effect, that makes the application a bit complicated. And I will start with this last aspect first. So I will talk a little bit about advanced single tree methods and what is new, the optimal drift method. Okay, so you might ask, well, why this 1D method? And the correct answer is maybe, or the honest answer is, in the 1D setting, this is more of theoretical interest. And you will see that theoretically we can prove that there are methods that have a higher order of convergence than the order of convergence you can at most expect with the classical one. So here I've introduced a new representation, much more convenient for convergence considerations. It looks very much like a geometric Brownian motion. You have a drift term here, you have a random term here, and this is just a plus one, minus one process with probability p, and you multiply with the square root here to get the correct variance. So that is the more convenient representation of the binomial tree that I'm using here. And I also show, again, a more sophisticated version of Donsker's theorem. In the first time I mentioned it, I showed it just the expectations in the discrete time model have to match the continuous time model exactly. Now, already when I told about Cox-Ross-Rubinstein, I said the matching is just approximately, and of course, Donsker's theorem is still valid if you have this approximating relation here. So if delta goes to zero, then the right parameters have to be matched. Okay, equipped with these two things, I can tell you two consequences. The first is no real consequence, it's just look at Cox-Ross-Rubinstein model as we have it. We have alpha n equal to 0, we have beta equal to sigma, we have the Pn, which is 1/2 plus 1/2 over r minus 1/2. There's a sigma squared missing, divided by sigma times the square root of delta t, and then you have that. Now, I will use two different models, which are both named Cox-Ross-Rubinstein later on. One is this one that you get out from the direct equation. The other one I will use is the one where I really use the martingale probabilities, the E times R times delta T minus D divided by U minus D later on. Here I just have those, well, maybe to confuse you, but you should not be confused yet later on when I show you the appropriate theorems. The second one is something which I find quite surprising. And this is a result by Steffi Müller, which is called the drift invariance. And what is it that you have there? Now, if you go back at those equations here, you can try to solve them, or at least solve them approximately, and then you will realize the following. If you choose the risk-neutral probability, which is the same for all kind of models, the risk-neutral probability, and if you choose U and V of that form, and you will see both the Cox-Ross-Rubinstein and the Randleman-Barthe model fit into this here, then the moment conditions of Donsker's theorem are automatically approximately satisfied, if and only if you choose beta equal to sigma. Now, what's the surprising thing about this result? The surprising thing is I don't mention any condition on the drift. Beta equal to sigma, that's it. The drift is free. You can choose a sequence, alpha n, of drift processes to maybe regularize or make the convergence more smooth, and we will do that in the following. So this is quite simple. You get it from, well, more or less doing a Taylor expansion of the moment conditions and assuming this, assuming that, and then you will see this is absolutely necessary and sufficient for Donsker's theorem to be satisfied. This would not be the case if I would not fix the probabilities here, but for that setting, it is like that. Okay, how to use the freedom of choosing this drift? Here's the second key ingredient. This is an originally result by Chang and Palmer for a special case for alpha n equal to zero and generalized by Steffi Müller. And it says that if Q is the unique equivalent martingale measure in the Black-Scholes model, the continuous time one, if we had chosen beta equal to sigma, and this is an assumption, if Pn has this representation satisfied by the risk-neutral probabilities, because you have this E times something in it, if you make the asymptotic expansion, you see that they have this form, and also satisfied by the original Randleman and Barthe with 1/2, the original Cox-Ross-Rubinstein, and Cn should be bounded, and this is just the rest here. It should be a small n, sorry. Then we obtain the following approximation result, and this approximation result tells us probability to be bigger than x at the final value of the binomial process is the same as the probability in the continuous time model plus a correction factor, which is 1 over square root of n, plus something which is 1 over n plus small o 1 over n. Now this is a bit disappointing, because first it says this is S Monte Carlo, 1 over square root of n, if you look at the possible values that you have, so no fast convergence. Otherwise, we know that this Bn is between minus 1 and 1, so we have a boundary for the order of convergence. We have a bound that gives us the best and worst results. And we can show that this B of n, B of x it should be, has this form. B of x has this form. Now, what can we do? We can choose this here to be maybe close to x, maybe not close to x, by choosing an appropriate alpha here. And I will give you two examples from the literature and one where it's done in an optimal way. So, how to use these results? As already said, obtain a good value for B, and a good value for B would be a constant one, or the best constant would, of course, be zero. And these are the two well-known results from the literature. The first is by Tian in 94, starting with the Cox-Ross-Rubinstein tree, no additional drift. They tilted the tree a little bit by choosing Bn such that it is 1, and the tilting means the point which is just above the x value, you tilt the tree in such a way such that x equals that. And then you get the 1, and the 1 says we have monotone convergence no improvement of the order of convergence, but monotone means we can speed up this by extrapolation. The second idea by Chang and Palmer is, well, if we can, why shouldn't we choose Bn equal to zero? And they do this by taking the x exactly in the middle, in terms of geometric mean, exactly in the middle between the two tree nodes, and then they get Bn equal to zero, and they get a faster order of convergence, 1 over n, but not monotone convergence. So here are some illustrations. That's the general Cox-Ross-Rubinstein tree. These are the bounds Bn1 and Bn-1. This here is the Tian convergence. You see it very regular, but slow. So you do extrapolation, and you see it converges very fast. It's a totally different scale here. And here is the Chang-Palmer case, where you again see it's like in this picture before, very fast convergence. Other order of convergence, not exactly monotone, but it converges also very fast, where this is the 1 over n term. Now, they all started with the Cox-Ross-Rubinstein tree, and the idea is, can we do it even better? And the answer is, yes, we can. We choose this additional drift parameter, such that, first of all, this h, which was the multiplier of the 1 over n, vanishes also. So the idea is, we apply Chang and Palmer to a binomial tree with an arbitrary non-zero drift parameter alpha. Then we get this representation here. And then we realize that g of alpha is indeed only a quadratic function in alpha. And there are two possible cases. One is this has a zero. If this has a zero, then we take alpha as the zero of that, and then we have a higher order of convergence, small o of 1 over n. If not, we make it as small or as big as possible, depending on the sign, and get at least the optimal constant, the same order of convergence as Chang and Palmer, but the optimal constant. Okay, here's the convergence behavior, and you see it here. This is the real value. We start extremely close. It converges, not monotonically, but it converges around the true value. Yeah, around the true value, not around something that converges from above. Around the true value, goes very, very fast, and we have that, well, nearly in an instant. And here, for comparing them all, we looked at a simple one, a European digital call. And so you see, this is the Black-Scholes value. All the others take a long time to get there. And here you see with the optimal drift model, starting from here, we're extremely close. Yeah, we're here with 2,000. The others need 15,000. And still, they are not that close as we have it here. So it's just an additional tilting of the tree, an initial tilting, that helps you to get this convergence. This was just for one particular option. It carries over to American calls and puts. We have compared them with the Leisen-Reimer algorithm, which sometimes is called a benchmark algorithm for American puts. And we have seen that it makes full use of the free parameters to obtain a better order of convergence. And we can prove, theoretically, that the convergence is superior. In all the other papers, this has never been proved. It was just numerically shown. It would be interesting to test this on more advanced options, but this is an aspect for future research. So here's my second problem. This is the multidimensional setting. In the multidimensional setting, you see we have an n-dimensional n period tree, and this is more or less given by m components. Now you see I've got n step size, n steps, m components. Each of the components look like a conventional binomial tree. But of course, the set Ki, they are in a way correlated, because we want to approximate a process where the Brownian motion is correlated itself, a multidimensional one. So we have correlations that we have to care for. As always, we choose the coefficients alpha I, beta I, and the up-down probabilities, such that the components of this, the vectors here over the different step sizes are IID. In each node, we have the same situation, and we have no dependence on jump up or down probability on the thing that has just occurred before. The components here themselves, they might be correlated, but the vectors are uncorrelated. The first two moments of the continuous time log returns should coincide at least approximately with those in the tree. And in particular, there's something missing. The covariances should satisfy that, the moment conditions. And if you just look at the number, you've got an m-dimensional tree. So you got 3m, is that correct? 3m free parameters. Then you got m means that have to be matched. And you've got m times m plus 1 half variances and covariances that have to be matched. Now take m equal to 3. You got 9 here. You got 3 there. And you got 6 half, 12 half, 6 again. You've got 9 there. So you got as much conditions as you have unknowns. So you might still hope for a solution, but you maybe have kept in mind that we also have this condition that the probability has to be in between 0 and 1. And people often believe that if you make the step size small enough, this is sufficient, and it is not. And I will show you an example in a moment. Disadvantages of those methods are, of course, the moment fitting might be very tedious. Think about m equal to 10 or whatever, and it's not clear if you have enough parameters to fit that. And as I said, this does not always lead to well-defined probabilities. So in fact, even if it's just a Black-Scholes model, the application in dimensions 4, 5, 6, or whatever of binomial trees is by far not insured. And you can say, I can still apply that, although the probabilities will get negative. But then you don't have Donskis theorem that helps you to ensure the convergence. Then you're in this PDE business of stability, consistency, and all those stuff that we could avoid with the probabilistic approach. First of all, here is the so-called BEG tree, Boyle, Evans, and Gibbs. This is just a generalized Coxworth-Rubinstein tree. You see, all those components look like a Coxworth-Rubinstein tree. Then they solved for the probabilities, and they came up with this thing here. 1 over 2m is, of course, well, clear because you have that much probabilities, 2 to the power m probabilities. So you have something like a uniform distribution, but then here you have this horrible expression here. And this depends very much on the correlation between the different Brownian motions that you would like to approximate, and also on the drift of the log price here. And what you see is that these things are still symmetric in log terms, but the dependence of the probability is not easy to interpret. It's not clear how the probability depends on the covariance structure, on the drift, and so on. What you see is if you have no covariance, then, or if they are independent, then this disappears, and then it's easier, but still it's not clear. And probabilities are not automatically non-negative. And once again, you could say, if I'm taking this very small, but if you take this very small, then this disappears, and this still stays. And this has a delta, which might be minus 1 or plus 1. And here's a very simple example. Just 3 stocks. This is really a correlation matrix. We have checked that. It's not just an example which is constructed. And then you have the probability for all 3 components going down. It's 1 over 8 multiplied with minus 0.2 multiplied with something that depends on delta t. Now, if delta t is small enough, you can neglect that. And then you've got minus 0.t times 1 over 8, which is definitely negative. Yeah? So this is no artificial example. This can happen all the time. This is more the rule than the exception. So this is the first thing to be learned, that multidimensional binomial trees are not easy. Even in dimension 3, they are not easy. If you take the n-dimensional random Barter tree, random and Barter tree, then you see, again, it is not symmetric in log terms. You have a simpler representation of the probability, so independent on the drift. But it depends on the covariance structure, and this still can have the minus ones here. So you have the same problem here as you have it with the generalized Coxworth-Rubinstein model. And again, you have the same probability with the sawtooth slide effect, and we have a two-dimensional option. This is an up barrier for the first, and a down up and in barrier for the first stock, a down and out barrier for the second stock. You have the same behavior, Coxworth-Rubinstein here, Randleman-Barter, more regular, but never as close as that. So what to do then? Now, the origin of this approach we came up with was that in this this center CM squared that I told you at the beginning, we had a joint project with computer scientists, and they wanted to do something. They wanted to create a kind of, well, functional programming approach that you could combine all kinds of options freely. You specify a contract, you have some properties like a barrier property, an averaging property. You mix this all together. You maybe add afterwards the second stock or whatever. You mix this all together and then you can write down the contract. And what they wanted to have a very flexible valuation approach. Now you can say do Monte Carlo, but doing Monte Carlo more or less in that approach, I would say rules out pricing American options. Because a flexible whatever algorithm, if it's a Longstaff Schwarz or a variant like this, it's not clear how to program this easily. So we decided to come up with a binomial approach. And with this binomial approach, we wanted to decompose more or less all the different stocks. And the idea was, if the correlations makes problem, why not decorrelating the stocks before setting up the tree? And this is the idea that we had. We said, this is the variance-covariance matrix. We make a decomposition which looks like that, and that can be anything, an orthogonal decomposition, a Cholesky decomposition, where D is just the identity matrix. So there are a lot of possibilities to do that. And the crucial observation is, if we then look at this log return process, the transformed one, then this log return process indeed is, well, consists of components that are independent. We have a different Brownian motion here. That makes no problem. We approximate all those things only in distribution and not pathwise. But the components are independent. They are just Brownian motions with drift. And we can calculate all the dynamics. And the nice thing now is we only have to concentrate on the components. We do a component-wise matching. These are 1D problems. Set up a tree then. We always get well-defined probabilities because there is no covariance that we have to match. It's automatically matched, right? And we can combine whatever 1D tree we want to. We can have a Cox-Ross-Rubinstein, a random and Barter tree, or if the model is such that one of the components doesn't change at all or changes only insignificantly, we can approximate it by a constant. So we have a lot of freedoms to do that. And the only thing we have to worry about is how to value the option in such a tree. And this is given here in our special choice. We use the 1D Randleman-Barter tree. Why that? Because all paths are equally likely. We don't have to multiply with the 1/2. We can multiply with the 1/2 to the power m afterwards. We use the spectral decomposition for decoupling, more by chance than by really thinking, because for our problem with the computer scientists, the Cholesky decomposition would have been easier. But you will see later on, if I give you the interpretation of the convergence, that the orthogonal decomposition has better properties. So this leads to that discretized process, all components independent. We then have to transform back each node because we want to value, and the valuation of the option is not in that transformed tree. It's done in the original tree. We transform the nodes back to get the original approximating tree, and then we just start at the beginning, and as always, we calculate the approximate option price via backward induction. Now you might say this costs an enormous amount of time, and you're right, to do all the nodes, transform them back. On the other hand, if you just have an option payoff that depends on the final state, may it be as complicated as possible, you only have to transform back the final values. Because you're working backwards through the tree, you don't need the values of the nodes in between because you're only averaging values that you have computed. So it depends on the option itself, how efficient or inefficient this will be. Then we did this. And, oh, there's the algorithm just written in form of an algorithm to show you that it's easy to do it. It's a bit more complicated than writing down a usual binomial tree, but not much. You see, this decomposition is easy. That's standard. It's implemented in every numerical program. The transformation is no big thing, right? Setting up the tree is easy. The transformation is easy. Evaluation of the payoff is also easy. This is nothing that should scare you. Then we looked at an example and we were totally surprised about this. you had all this wiggling around by Cotsworth Rubinstein, by Randleman and Barter, and this was that. And we did nothing. We did nothing to smooth the convergence. Yeah. And directly we got two questions. The first is how to explain this. It's always good to have something nice, but if you can't explain that, well, you might use another example and you get it by, and this disappears. And the second question, is it really a gain? And it's really a gain because if you think of what Tian did with history, he had this nice regular convergence, and then at least here you can apply extrapolation to speed up the convergence. So it's really a gain. And the interesting thing is how to explain this. Okay, here are some pictures which are not so nicely translated in the colors, but here I explain the origin of the sawtooth effect for a Randleman Barter tree for this option we looked at, and I have chosen n equal to 17 and n equal to 18. Now what you see is this is the area where the payoff is non-zero, this here. Now for n equal to 17, this column, this row, they are just outside the area where they count. For n equal to 18, they are just inside. So this is where you have this big jump from down from up to down, and then it goes up and down again. This explains the sawtooth effect, that options typically have a structure where the payoff is parallel to this line and column structure of the two-dimensional tree. Now, with our transformation, oops, nearly not readable, but maybe readable enough to explain to you, the nonlinear transformation that we applied leads to that. You see there are just some points outside, some points inside, so you only lose or gain some points, no completely lines or columns. And you might say if the option has such a payoff structure, yeah, such a one, then of course it's clear that the other thing is better if you have lines or columns. But as you typically have this for things applied in practice, this algorithm is a bit more stable with regards to the monotone convergence with increasing n. Okay, so with Richardson extrapolation, you see, you get in the neighborhood quite fast, and then you're quite close. Now, you might say this is not as fast as in the one-dimensional setting, and you're right, but in dimensions 2, 3, 4, or whatever, you will see that all those dream results that we have in dimension 1, where we look at the fourth digit after the comma or things like that, you can forget about those. Yeah, the higher the dimension, the harder it is to get that close. And here you see, in this situation, with some tricks, you can calculate really an explicit pricing formula, and the Black-Scholes price is 35.76. And you see all the others, they don't come close. Yeah, they don't come really close, even with that much depth. And also the decoupled algorithm converges nicely monotone, but still it is the worst one of all those, which has to be expected from the picture I showed you. The others are sometimes by chance closer, sometimes further away. But if you do extrapolation, you see, starting from that point on here, you're already quite fast. And you don't get really fast, maybe if you have a bit more. But this is already sufficient, I would say. And I've also printed here the time it takes compared to the BEG time, computing time it has. So the Randleman Barter is a bit faster. The decoupling takes more time because we have this backwards transformation. The extrapolation does not take a lot more time. And you see here it takes three times as much as this one, but we can virtually end with 500. And even if you have more than five times as much steps, the others are not close. So this is much faster in comparison with that. So to sum up, what I believe is that those decoupled trees are still easy to implement. You don't have to fiddle around with the covariance. They are not restricted by any parameter setting. They avoid the sawtooth effects. Well, as I said, you can construct options where you might have a sawtooth effect too. They allow for an efficient implementation, extrapolation, maybe component adaptive discretization, or even model reduction if the underlying is maybe 10-dimensional but virtually only 3-dimensional. They need a higher computing time by this backward transformation for path-dependent options, and it's clear that they are not universally the best methods. You can always take an option, tailor your algorithm according to the option and get a better convergence, but I think they are universally applicable methods that can get you a good estimate quite far. And therefore, I believe that this is a kind of universal method. There might still be some aspects to do so, how to apply them to more general processes. And I cannot answer this at the moment, but I think it's a good start to have that. We have published nearly everything that is inside this area, and you can find this more or less all published. And it's nice to be in time, and I would like to thank you for your attention. Thanks.